At New England Endovascular Center, we offer advanced, minimally invasive treatments for a variety of conditions, such as uterine fibroids, internal bleeding hemorrhoids, knee pain from osteoarthritis, and much more. As the Pioneer Valley's first outpatient interventional and endovascular center, we provide state-of-the-art care in a comfortable outpatient setting with little downtime and a quick recovery. Visit nevascular.com to learn more. New England Endovascular Center. Get back to what you love doing.
Hi, I'm Dr. Doris Harris, PhD, and welcome to my Health Matters radio talk show, where I discuss the latest health trends and tips to help you stay healthy. There is always a great lineup of guests who will be sharing their expertise on various health topics. This show presents a wide range of information from nutrition and exercise to mental health and wellness. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn how you can live your best healthy life. You're tuned to Health Matters here on your dial, 90.7 FM, WTCC, and I'm Doris Harris, your host. And today we have a very informative show, and we have Dr. Chill. Good afternoon, Dr. Chill.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Could you please introduce yourself to the listening audience?
Absolutely. So I am a vascular and interventional radiologist, which I'll explain shortly. Not a lot of people know about that specialty, but I am at a practice here in Western Massachusetts called New England Endovascular Center. And in my specialty, we focus on minimally invasive treatments. So we treat all sorts of conditions, and the commonality of what we treat is that we can do so with image guidance in a minimally invasive fashion.
Excellent. And what medical center are you with, doctor?
So the center where I'm at is New England Endovascular Center. We're located in West Springfield, just at the cross streets of 91 and 90, so pretty centrally located and accessible for people. And it is myself, as well as my partner, Dr. Khan. But we have a range of other supportive staff and medical professionals that we work together with.
Excellent. And Dr. Chu, I know you want to talk about fibroids. And why is that important?
Well, fibroids are important because it is a benign condition. However, it can cause some pretty significant symptoms. And, many women, will have fibroids. Actually, about 80% of women will get fibroids in their lifetime, although not all of them will cause symptoms. But for those that, are having symptoms from fibroids, they may not know it. And, or they may not know that there are options that they can have to help them out with this.
Mm-hmm. And what are fibroids?
So fibroids are a benign, that means non-cancerous, growth, which develop in the wall of the uterus. They're extremely common, as I mentioned, and they can vary in size, anywhere from the size of a pea to the size of a grapefruit, or even larger. And it can cause a variety of symptoms. Now, most commonly, this is something that's diagnosed in women who are in their 30s or 40s. Although we see, sometimes we'll see it in younger women and sometimes even older women. The symptoms often develop gradually because there is sort of a correlation with how big the fibroids get and what sort of symptoms you have, although not always the case. But typically, women will have heavy menstrual periods, pelvic pressure, or fatigue. Now, if the fibroids get really big, they can actually push on other structures in the pelvis and can cause symptoms depending on what it's pushing on. So, for example, if a fibroid gets big and pushes on the bladder, someone may be suffering from urinary symptoms. They may, need to go urinate frequently, and it's because of that pressure on the bladder.
And they're pretty common. You said 80% of
Yeah.
women. Yeah.
Yeah, about 70 to 80% of women will develop fibroids during their lifetime. Now, not all fibroids are going to cause symptoms. So, sometimes women will have some imaging done for another reason, whether it's a CT scan or an ultrasound, and they're told they have fibroids. This doesn't necessarily mean you need to have it treated. Now, if you are one of those women that do have symptoms, it is important to know that, this is common. It's benign. It's not a cancer, but most importantly, they are treatable.
And who is most affected by them? Is it a particular group of women? Is it a particular demographic?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you nailed it. We tend to see fibroids more frequently in African American women. We're not entirely sure why that is, but this is definitely a demographic where it is a lot more common. And now there are other factors that kind of are associated with fibroids. For example, how many pregnancies you may have had, what your age is. There is a correlation with hormones, so all those sorts of things do play in. But definitely, in the African American population tend to have a lot more fibroids, although it could affect anyone.
Yes. When you say it does, sometimes it's how many pregnancies? Can you elaborate a little bit of that? Is it someone who has more than two children?
Yeah, so it's more than one. I mean,
Okay.
I take that back. The fibroids are actually more common in women who have never been pregnant.
Okay.
So, more pregnancies and appears to have a lower lifetime risk. Of developing clinically significant fibroids. And again, the exact reason isn't completely understood. But we just know that, fibroids are influenced by hormones such as estrogen and progesterone. That's we so there definitely is correlation to levels of hormones and where we see more significant growth, but we don't have a great way to perfectly predict who's going to have them and who's not going to have them. If someone has fibroids, are they going to grow bigger and how fast are they going to grow? So it's more of if someone, is having symptoms such as heavy menstrual periods or pelvic pressure, pain, or other symptoms in that area, those are the people who might want to have a further evaluation to see what's going on in there. And that's typically done, with a gynecologist as an initial evaluator. Although sometimes, your primary care doctor can order the appropriate study. Once the diagnosis has been made, at that point, that's when you're going to start, thinking about what your options are. And there are multiple options. We can get into that. So, yeah.
Yes. And why do you think so many women suffer with fibroid symptoms without realizing what is causing them?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the symptoms often develop gradually, so you might not even notice it until it's gotten bad. And then a lot of women can assume that heavy periods, pelvic pressure, or fatigue are just simply part of getting older. Many women kind of think these symptoms are normal because friends and family may experience similar issues. And unfortunately, some women are just told that heavy bleeding is something they just have to live with.
Yeah, just not being sure, not knowing. So it's important if you are experiencing any type of symptom, it's better to go and have it checked out.
I completely agree.
Yes, and I just want to piggyback with fibroids being common and who is most affected by them. And you have mentioned African American women. Is there a genetic connection to that?
Well, what I would say is there definitely is a strong genetic component. Now we don't know exactly which, gene or genetic mutation is involved, but we see it a lot more commonly in women who have an immediate family member who had fibroids, such as, their mother or sister. And in fact, family history is one of the strongest risk factors we know about. So, if you've had a family member, we say mother or sister, but even cousin, aunt, your risk is higher.
That's why it's important to know your family history. Extremely important.
A
That's
hundred percent.
very good information. What are some of the most common symptoms you see in women with fibroids?
So some of the most common symptoms will be related to menstruation. So very, very typically we'll see heavy menstrual bleeding or excessive pain and cramping during menstruation. And sometimes for women who do bleed that much, that can actually result in a little bit of an anemia, meaning like your blood levels are a little low, and that can cause fatigue, lightheadedness, and so forth. The other symptoms that we see are related to the size of the fibroids. So that's what we call bulk symptoms. And that's where the fibroids get so big, they're pushing on other structures. And we mentioned before, a fibroid can get big enough to push on the bladder and cause urinary symptoms. Well, it can push the other direction and it can actually push on the bowel and cause constipation. But more commonly, with the bulk symptoms, is women may experience, just the sensation of pelvic fullness, and pain and cramping.
Well, do you see multiple fibroids, or can the growth just be one large growth?
Oftentimes we see multiple fibroids, although very typically, one or two of the fibroids will be dominant, meaning they're like the larger ones. And in general, there's usually a correlation with the number and size of the fibroids to the symptoms that someone will experience. But that's not always the case. Sometimes even a small fibroid, if it's just in the right spot, that can cause the bleeding symptoms. Now, if it's a small fibroid, we won't expect those bulk symptoms, but even, a small fibroid in the right place can cause the bleeding symptoms and cramping and, painful periods.
So, women may not even know that they have a fibroid if they're not experiencing any problem.
If a fibroid is small, or if it's just not pushing on anything, then they may not know they have it, and that's okay. If someone has a fibroid and it's not causing them any symptoms, then most of the time we wouldn't be talking about treating that, because the natural progression of fibroids is that eventually, once someone undergoes menopause, as those hormone levels will decrease, those fibroids tend to shrink on their own, and go away. And and that's probably why some women just kind of live with this, because they saw their mother go through this, where they bled heavily and had pain and then eventually went away, and they just think that's kind of a part of life that you have to you have to go through. But the important thing to know is that this is something that is easily treatable, and you don't have to suffer, and you shouldn't be suffering. So if you don't have symptoms, then there's no need to look for these things. But if you are having symptoms, it's definitely worthwhile to see a specialist and probably undergo some sort of imaging to take a look.
I had four friends who had severe problems with fibroids. So I automatically asked my doctor, my gynecologist, "Do I have fibroids?" And he said, "Yeah, you do. Women have fibroids." He said, "Is there a problem?" I said, "Not that I know of." And that's when he told me, he said, "Well, there's really nothing you need to do unless you have problems." He said, "They eventually will shrink." I didn't know that because that group of friends, they actually all had hysterectomies. And I was surprised, and I thought that's what needed to happen with all women who had a fibroid. So I'm just so happy, and I'm pleased that you are helping the audience understand, have a better understanding of this particular topic. How can fibroids affect a woman's quality of life beyond the physical symptoms?
Well, it's a great question. And this, this comes from years of working with women and kind of hearing about all the things that they've been going through. But women may miss work, social events. They may have anxiety about unpredictable bleeding. They might have sleep disruption, either from the bleeding and cramping, or even if they're experiencing frequent urination from pressure on the bladder, getting up multiple times to use the bathroom. They may have difficulty exercising. And then, you can even have an impact on relationships and intimacy. So yeah, it's not just a physical problem. Quality of life can really be impaired by this issue.
I guess there's a component which can be very stressful as well, too.
100%.
Yes. And why are some of the big, what, I'm sorry, are some of the biggest misconceptions you hear about fibroids?
Yeah, great question. I mean, some of the misconceptions are that heavy bleeding during your period is normal, that this is something you have to live with. That you just have to wait until menopause for it to go away. That nothing can be done. And one of the misconceptions is that the only treatment is a hysterectomy, because there are other options, and I'm sure we'll get into it, including what we offer here in a minimally invasive fashion.
Yes, I myself personally, the women that I mentioned, I've only heard of hysterectomies. So I'm glad that you're going to give us different types of treatment options. And why, I think you did expand on this. Why do many women live with symptoms for years before treating or seeking out treatment options?
Yeah, so again, we mentioned that a lot of the times these symptoms kind of come on slowly. And it's kind of the nature of the world we live in, that people are busy. Women especially often are the primary caregiver for their family, or they're just busy with their jobs and lives. And a lot of people have a fear of surgery, so they kind of just push it off and say, hey, this is going to go away, and I don't want to deal with it now. And there's definitely a component of lack of awareness about treatment options.
There is. And as you mentioned, surgery, again, there is a fear that there is other options.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, I had four friends and they all had hysterectomies. And I thought that was a choice, the only choice that they had to make for that. And but I didn't know. And it wasn't until I told asked my doctor, and he was able to explain that I didn't have any symptoms, I didn't have any problems. Eventually, they would shrink. I never knew that. Never,
Right,
not at
right.
all. Yeah. And what would you want one women to know if they've been told their symptoms are simply something they have to live with?
I would say, they deserve an evaluation. There are more treatment options than ever before. And getting information doesn't mean that you're committing to treatment. Sometimes you just kind of want to get the right information. For example, in your case, you got the right information for you. The fibroids were small and not causing symptoms, and that they would go away. And for someone else, understanding where they're at and what their treatment options, that already, knowledge is power. So just knowing what you're going through, knowing that, this is common, you're not alone, and kind of understanding what your options are allows you to make an informed decision and kind of decide what's right for you.
Yeah, you're right. I think not knowing that they're not alone, that this is something that happens to at least 80% of women, that they don't have to look at themselves differently, or they don't have to look at themselves as they did something wrong to cause this health concern. I also want to say, before someone come in to see you, is it important for them, if they're having symptoms, to maybe document that so they'll be able to talk to you to the best in the best way that they can, to help you understand what is actually going on inside their body?
Yeah, that's always a great idea. Not everyone has the time or capacity to do so, but keeping a little journal is definitely helpful, not only for us as the provider, but even for yourself, to kind of know like where you're at, what's going on, especially in this kind of situation where these symptoms come on slowly over time. You just take note to yourself of like, let's say how often are you having, periods? Are they regular at the same time every month, or irregular? How many days are they lasting for? How many pads are you passing through? And this can also help someone understand themselves if their symptoms are getting worse over time, although well, most people kind of know that. But definitely, when you show up to your appointment, if you can provide that information, that also helps us to understand what you're going through. But what I would say is if that, if it's a little too much for someone to keep a dedicated journal like that, that's don't let that be the thing to hold you back from coming in to see a professional, because usually by way of conversation, we'll be able to kind of get a sense of what you're going through.
Yeah, very good point. It's just a matter of articulating and just talking, just sharing, because no question is dumb. And if you share the information, you'll be able to decipher what's going on and how you can move forward in helping them. So that's really good. Just want to piggyback when you have mentioned most women are caregivers, and sometimes we put others, our children, our husband, our significant others before ourselves. So I just want to say, for something sensitive in this matter, bring a friend with you and share that information with a friend who can be supportive and maybe help you share that information with a doctor, or just bring a friend to have someone there to hold your hand, because it can be a very sensitive topic. Doctor, would you like to elaborate on what I just said?
Yes, yes, I would. I think, yeah, you're right. What aside from oftentimes falling into the caregiving role, women, I have found that they are a lot more likely to put everyone else in front of them. So, if they have a list of 10 things that have to get done, they're taking care of their own health issues might be number 11. And it is too bad because, it's hard to see someone, go through something like that and suffer, especially when something can be done. And I think it is important to know that there are options, and some of these options, are pretty quick and easy, and even if you want to say that that taking care of everyone else is more important. Taking care of yourself, making sure you're in the best shape, allows you to take care of other people. And I completely agree with you. If you have a friend or a family member, you should lean on them. People often don't want to be a burden on others, but at the same time, your family and your friend, they want to help take care of you. You're actually doing them a favor by giving them the opportunity to be there and hold your hand and be in that supportive role. So, it does work both ways in terms of the benefit.
Yes, excellent point. You mentioned treatment options has changed. When someone is diagnosed with fibroids today, what treatment options are available?
So we broadly can separate these into a couple of categories. When we're dealing with small fibroids, symptoms are either really mild or not really there, or if someone is near menopause, you might want to go and just observe, watchful waiting. Because these are the ones not really bothering you, and they're going to shrink. Now, when fibroids are causing symptoms, very, very commonly, the first step in management is going to be with medications. Now, medications don't eliminate the fibroids. The fibroids are still there, but sometimes they can help control the symptoms. So this is a good option for someone who might have, just the bleeding symptoms. And since the bleeding is hormonally related, sometimes just taking, some hormone therapy such as birth control pills or an IUD, that's an intrauterine device. Sometimes those things can help manage these symptoms. Now, as I mentioned, these aren't eliminating the fibroids, so it's just managing the symptoms. So most of the time, if you stop the medication, the symptoms will return. Now, beyond the medications, getting into the procedure side, there are multiple, treatment options. But the most common ones are going to be surgical or minimally invasive. Now, on the surgical side, you mentioned your friends that had their the uterus is taken out altogether, and that's called a hysterectomy. So that's one option surgically. And then another option that's surgical is what's called a myomectomy. And this is where a surgeon or a gynecological surgeon will remove the fibroids while preserving the uterus. This is a good option for women who want to preserve their fertility. And it is still a surgical procedure. The other option that is unfortunately less known, but is a very, very good option for many women suffering from fibroids, is the uterine fibroid embolization procedure. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit more in detail, because that's the procedure that's done by myself or my partner. That's that is an interventional radiologist. A uterine fibroid embolization is a minimally invasive procedure. Most of the time, it's done as an outpatient, meaning you come in, you have the procedure, and then you go back home. It's not a big surgery. The entire procedure is done through a very, very tiny needle stick, through the blood vessel, we either go at the top of the leg or from the wrist. What's different about this procedure is that instead of going in surgically and physically removing the fibroids or the uterus, what we do instead is we kind of adjust the blood flow going to the fibroids. We're able to navigate from that small little pinpoint incision, and we're able to basically decrease the amount of blood flow getting to those fibroids. And in this way, the fibroids just shrink on their own. So you don't have to physically remove it from the body. The fibroid will shrink. Your body has a really good way of processing things, recycling materials, etc. So the fact that the fibroid is still inside of you, it's not going to fall off or anything. I'd say so it'll just kind of shrink down over time. We're able to treat multiple fibroids simultaneously. All right, so it doesn't matter if you have one fibroid or 10. In that same procedure, we're able to target all of them.
And that is an outpatient procedure, pretty
Yes,
much.
it's I would say vast majority of the times it's done as an outpatient. So you come in, you're at our center for a few hours. The procedure itself takes about an hour, but a little bit of time you got to prep beforehand, and after the procedure, we'll usually watch people for an hour or two before sending them back home. Occasionally, this type of procedure is done in a hospital setting, but that used to be more mainstream. But I'd say nowadays, most fibroid embolization procedures are done in the outpatient setting.
That's a very good procedure. And what tends to surprise patients most when they learn about this minimum invasive treatment option?
Well, many people have never heard of uterine fibroid embolization. I think a lot of women are surprised to find out that, surgery may not be necessary. I think a lot of them are appreciative of the relatively quick recovery. I think the fact that you can have the procedure and then go home that same day, and I think a lot of people kind of underestimate the value of keeping your uterus in your body, and I think people are surprised that you don't need a major surgery and have your whole uterus removed.
Yeah, that's a good thing. What if I came in and I presented with fibroids? Walk me through the system. What would happen? And they were severity. Walk me through the system, please.
Well, I think the first thing that we do is when someone comes in with any sort of issue is we kind of just want to sit and listen. A lot of people, just haven't gotten a chance to totally, tell their story or process, and we start off by just doing a lot of listening. So, sometimes, not everyone is a talker. We'll ask a couple, some pointed questions to get the ball to get things, rolling with the conversation. But after we get an understanding of what someone is going through, we want to know, what their goals are, where they're looking to get improvement. We will review whatever imaging might be available already. Now, sometimes that may be an ultrasound that was ordered by their gynecologist or primary doctor. Sometimes they've had an MRI. Those are probably the two most common types of imaging that people have for their uterus and fibroids. And we get into a discussion of the treatment options, because while we do the fibroid embolization procedure, as I mentioned, there are multiple options, and not all that involves a procedure. Maybe they weren't aware that medication is an option, and they might want to try that first. So we try to go through everything, all options, including the one we do, but not limited to that. And then we want to give time for questions, and informed decision making, because we want the person who's standing before us, we want them to feel empowered. We want them to have the knowledge, and we want them to to feel comfortable making that decision, of how they want to proceed. And not everyone is even, sometimes people need to take some time to process, and that's okay too. So this is a relaxed environment where we're there to kind of listen, to to discuss, hand holding as needed. And sometimes a little bit of time to process is in order. And follow-up discussions are always welcome, as needed.
Yeah, I think that's very important because it builds trust and it also helps the individual within the decision-making process. And that's what individuals want. They want it to be a partnership, want to be able to definitely have their voice heard, but also knowing that the information that they're getting is a trusted information and applies just to them. So I think that is wonderful. Very happy with the information you share. Tell me a little bit more about the center.
Yeah, so New England Endovascular Center, we're an outpatient center. We do focus on minimally invasive treatments, for a variety of conditions. We have a full clinic where we meet people for evaluations, and as well as for follow-up. We do have some imaging on site, primarily ultrasound. So that's something that we do. I think what people really appreciate when they come to our center, is that it is an entirely different experience than what people are used to. Our center is, it's very nice. It's small to the point where everyone knows your name. If you come back for a follow-up, you're greeted with a smile. We're all of the mentality here, that we want to provide the kind of treatment that we would want our own family member to have, and we try to do that in every step of the way. So if whether we're seeing you for an office visit and just providing you with information, or whether you're going through with the procedure and you have to kind of go through that whole process, all the people that you'll meet, are people that really are just going to treat you very well, make you feel comfortable, and again, just it's kind of it give you that personal, warm experience. So that's what I would say is, kind of our the main thing we try to do.
Yes. Now, if you do have your fibroids removed, do new fibroids grow back? Can they grow back?
That's a very good question. Now, a lot of that depends on the what procedure you've had, and how old you are. So, obviously, if you've had a hysterectomy, your uterus is no longer there, so no fibroids are growing back there. And I guess one can say that's one advantage to that procedure. If you've had a myomectomy, meaning that's the surgery where just the fibroid is kind of carved out in a surgery, or if you've had our procedure, which is where we're just shrinking the fibroids, then what I always tell people is that because the fibroids are hormonally, dependent, or kind of goes along with the hormone levels. It really depends on how old you are as to what we'll expect next. So, for example, if you're in your early 30s and you have a fibroid embolization procedure, you're pretty young. You're probably not going through to menopause anytime soon. So there is a chance that the fibroids can grow back, either the same ones or more likely new ones that may grow. That being said, if that were to happen, well, two things. First of all, the regrown fibroids may not be causing symptoms. Again, not all fibroids do. And if a fibroid does grow again and it does cause symptoms, then you will have all the same options before you, including you could have the fibroid embolization procedure again. So that is an option. Now, if a woman comes to me and they are in their mid or late 40s, and we're doing the fibroid embolization procedure, the odds of anything regrowing at that point is pretty low, because by the time there would be any chance for a fibroid to regrow, most likely you're kind of getting into that perimenopausal or menopausal state. And at that point, as we mentioned earlier, the natural progression is for these fibroids to shrink. So we would not expect new fibroids to grow or fibroids to regrow.
Doctor, what is the most important message you hope the listeners will take away from today's discussion?
I would say important message would be that fibroids are very common. Symptoms should not be ignored. Women should not assume that suffering is normal, and effective treatments are available.
Very well said. Thank you. Well, I want to take the opportunity to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to deliver this wonderful, informative message on fibroids. Any other final thoughts, Dr. Chill?
No, I thank you for the opportunity to talk about this. It is women's health is really important to me. I've had a lot of important strong women in my life, and I it's really important for me to know that we're providing the best possible care. And women deserve to know all their treatment options, not just surgery, but they should know that there are minimally invasive treatments like uterine fibroid embolization as well.
Yes. Thank you. As always, stay tuned to Health Matters because your health does matter. Thank you and goodbye.